The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Ed Rooney.
This is George Peterson.
How are you today, sir?
Well, we've had a bit of bad luck this morning, as you may have heard.
Yeah, I heard, and I'm all broken up. Boy, what a blow.
Yeah. Well, it's been a tough morning, and we've got a lot of family business to take care of, so if you wouldn't mind excusing Sloan, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. Yeah, you just produce a corpse, and I'll release Sloan. I want to see this dead grandmother firsthand. It's all right, Grace. It's Ferris Bueller, little twerp. I'm going to set a trap and let him fall right into it.
Ed, I'm sorry. Did you say you wanted to see a body?
Yeah, that's right. Just roll her old bones on over here, and I'll dig up your daughter. You know that school policy.
Oh?
Was this your mother?
No, my wife's mother.
Ed Rooney's office.
Hi, this is Ferris Bueller. Can I speak to Mr. Rooney, please? Thank you.
Hold.
I'll tell you what, dipshit. If you don't like my policies, you can just come on down here and smooch my big old white butt.
Ed!
Pucker up, buttercup.
What?
Ferris Bueller's online, too.
Coming or going.
Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Oh, hi. It's Thursday, February 13th, 2014, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob. That's Chez right over there.
Yeah.
We're brought to you by BubbleGenius.com, your one-stop shop for everything soap. Go there, buy lots and lots and lots of soap, because it's the best. Also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. Charles, easily the best attorney ever. He's smart, he knows how to communicate with his clients. The Bowen Group covers commercial, banking, manufacturing, employment, personal injury, and medical malpractice law. Large firm experience, small firm attention, elite firm ability. If you need a great lawyer, click the link on the podcast page for thebowenlawgroup.com. Oh, by the way, make sure to click the BobSeska.com Amazon link. It's right there under the logo. If you shop at Amazon, enter the site, takes you right to the main page of the site using our link. It says Amazon link, BobSeska.com. Click that. You don't get charged any extra. In fact, you save lots of money, and we get a small commission. We're also brought to you by Chez's memoir. It's called Dead Star Twilight. Get it at Amazon or at DeusExMalcontent.com.
Yes.
Okay, lots to talk about this week. I think we got lots to talk about on both the free show today and the after party tomorrow. And I think the best place to start is maybe the biggest or most discussed news item on Twitter, at least among the people I follow on Twitter, is this new NBC News article about how Edward Snowden gained access to all of this information.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, it's
because I've been buried in my computer.
Yeah, it's okay. But it's
I've been writing about Drake.
I mean, it's Michael Isikoff. Okay, I mean, Michael Isikoff is pretty reliable. He's one of those top shelf people. I mean, he's like Dana Priest, you know, one of these very well respected journalists.
Right.
The article is headlined "Exclusive: Snowden Swiped Password from NSA Coworker." Pretty big deal. That's a pretty big deal. Before we dive into this, you know what Joy and I have been watching lately? I picked up on Blu-ray the Bourne trilogy, the original Bourne trilogy, not the latest movie, but the first three movies with Matt Damon. And we watched, last night we watched Bourne Ultimatum.
Right.
And boy, first time I've seen that movie since the whole Snowden thing broke.
Yeah.
He absolutely thinks he's Jason Bourne. I mean, I would be shocked if he hadn't seen that movie sometime before he started getting all those documents and leaking them to Glenn Greenwald. Because it really is. It's sort of like, Bourne Ultimatum is sort of like a stylized, you know, Snowden story. Like, with a lot more action. A lot more action. So I thought it would be funny if I came up with a new Snowden sound. This is my new Snowden sound. Every time we talk about Snowden.
The Moby track.
The Moby track. Edward Snowden.
That is Snowden's, that's Snowden's Horatio Caine putting his sunglasses on at the beginning of CSI Miami.
So I'm thinking about this. I mean, he's swiping passwords now, but this actually had bad consequences for the person he stole the password from. Okay, the headline, again, "Exclusive Snowden Swipe Password from NSA Coworker." A civilian NSA employee recently resigned after being stripped of his security clearance for allowing former agency contractor Edward Snowden to use his personal login credentials to access classified information, according to an agency memo obtained by NBC News. In addition, an active-duty member of the U.S. military and a contractor have been barred from accessing NSA facilities after they were, quote-unquote, implicated in actions that may have aided Snowden, the memo states. Their status is now being reviewed by their employers, the memo says. Interesting. The February 10th memo sent to Congressional Intelligence and Judiciary Committees last week provided the first official account of a sweeping NSA internal inquiry. Of course, we knew this was going to happen. Aimed at identifying intelligence officials and contractors who may have been responsible for one of the biggest security breaches in U.S. history. The memo is unclassified, but labeled for official use only. All right. So, he's stealing passwords. Now, this runs entirely contrary to his story, right? I mean, his story was always that I, sitting at my computer, could, you know, read the president's email, right? And, you know, that he could have easy access just as part of his systems administrator job to all of this stuff. But indeed, he didn't. There were some things that he didn't have access to that he borrowed someone's password. Now, bear in mind, this is NBC News publishing this story. NBC News, as you recall, last week, and I think the week before,
has been working with Glenn Greenwald.
Well, today, right on cue.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. Please tell me that Greenwald is bashing NBC.
Oh, yes. Yes, he is.
Oh, my
yes,
God. Jesus Christ. The man has no shame.
Here's Glenn.
Just zero shame.
Glenn Greenwald on Twitter. There's no reason to be the slightest bit skeptical about a memo prepared by the NSA about Snowden and intended for public release. Hashtag U.S. media. Then, let's see. Tina Brown tweets, and this is a good tweet. Tina Brown tweets, "So, hashtag Snowden stole coworkers' passwords to get secrets. They lost security clearance. What a hero," she says. And then Greenwald responds to Tina Brown and says, "Yeah, or maybe uncritically believing NSA claims about Snowden intended for public release isn't such a good idea."
Right. Basically, think about it. Basically, Greenwald's entire overture, whatever you want to call it, is this: if you're saying something bad about Snowden, if you're a media outlet, you are, I mean, it's the same kind of thing that Jonathan Chait wrote about. Any release from the government or any release from anybody on Snowden is to be looked at with skepticism, is the news outlet must be, must be corrupt in some way.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. I mean, seriously, everybody except Glenn Greenwald is wrong.
Yeah.
Glenn Greenwald is the one guy who is always right, and everybody else is never right, unless they're saying the same things Greenwald is.
Exactly. Well, that's his approach, that Snowden is the only one who has the discretion to be able to release these documents. He and Snowden, both Greenwald and Snowden. But the government officials we elected, you know, for example, Barack Obama with 56 million votes or whatever it was. No, he doesn't have authorization from the American public to determine what remains secret and what doesn't.
But Edward Snowden and Greenwald does.
Yeah. I mean, that's what Daniel Ellsberg, I think there was some panel that David Frum was live tweeting yesterday, some NSA Snowden panel. And I think Daniel Ellsberg had said something to the degree with, like, who do you trust more to, you know, release these documents or keep these secrets, Snowden or, you know, Glenn Greenwald or the U.S. government? Which is absurd. And, of course, David Frum appropriately. And by the way, invoking David Frum right here leads directly to a topic we're going to be talking about on the after party. Just want to tease that a little bit.
Because
we were talking about it before the show. We decided to talk about it in the after party. But, you know, I mean, David Frum brought up that great point, which is that, you know, we elected our government. We didn't elect Edward Snowden to do anything, for that matter. I mean, for God's sake, he didn't even work for... directly for the government. He worked for Booz Allen Hamilton, a corporation. So Greenwald continued here on Twitter. He said someone named Asher Wolf says, you all believing NSA memos now? Bwah, ha, 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 ha. And then Greenwald piles on, says, they claimed with no evidence that Snowden took 1.7 million docs. Therefore, he did. Hashtag media. Again, it's like he's going. You know what? It's so cowardly.
No, you know, I got to give him credit. Nobody uses passive aggressive hashtags better than Glenn Greenwald.
And what's funny is he's being a little bit weaselly and cowardly about it because he's not mentioning.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Go figure. He's not mentioning NBC News by name. He's just generally attacking the media.
Right. Exactly. Because he can't. Because it's a hand that feeds him.
Yeah. He also tweeted...
just wait, though. Wait till he's done. Seriously. Wait till you know, they're seriously 100% up and running over at First Look, and he doesn't have to worry about NBC anymore. He is going to go on the warpath.
Oh, yeah.
NBC has earned themselves no protection from this little bastard.
No. And that's what he does. I mean, you know, but they gobble it up. I mean, how many times did he appear on MSNBC slamming MSNBC?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and then he goes and gets.
He's in some ways that makes him the. Well, I was going to say the left, but the libertarian Ann Coulter, because Ann Coulter always does the same thing. It's a game. They keep inviting her on these shows, even though they know full well that she's going to beat them up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they do it because they want to seem like they're above it all.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Oh, we don't care. We're self-critical. We're fair on everything. So if you have something bad to say about us, but there's also a level of deference that we've observed when it comes to Glenn Greenwald for the last year, because he does have access to, you know, lots and lots and lots of information that these other news outlets didn't receive from Snowden. So therefore, they kiss his butt so maybe they can get a scoop. And so that's what's going on. And then, of course, he turns around like he did today and, you know, bites the hand that feeds.
Of course.
So, yeah, meanwhile, you mentioned The Intercept. The Intercept launched on Monday, and it looks to me like it's just a blog. I mean, I was kind of expecting something that looked more like The Huffington Post or even The Daily Banter, for that matter, where it was a little more, it had a lot of different stuff to look at, and there were different articles and sidebars and things, and... You know, but it's $250 million Pierre Omidyar sunk into this thing, and it looks like...
And it begins with Google image search pictures of the NSA building.
Yes. And they were... I mean, Glenn Greenwald was on Twitter, and they were just, you know, doing the Twitter equivalent of cackling over this thing. Like, they got this big thing. They're coming up with different fun names for it, like, oh, we've trying to spotlight, we've illuminated... The surveillance state. Now, by the way, I always thought correct me if I'm wrong, I always thought the phrase surveillance state was intended to describe an entire society rather than, you know, a bunch of buildings.
Right.
But they were referring to the guy who posted those photos easily.
Yeah, the surveillance state is something intangible. It's not that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a broader description.
Maybe you could refer to that as sort of a surveillance apparatus, but that's not the surveillance. The surveillance state would be the entire country. And genuinely, if you believe that we're living in the surveillance state right now, certainly as opposed to, and everybody does this, you know, the straw man of 1984, you know, if you believe that, you're nuts. You're completely insane.
Right. Well,
you don't deserve to be taken. Your opinions don't deserve to be taken seriously at all. This is not Oceania. We don't live, you know.
Yeah.
No.
Well, that actually reminds me of something else, because now could the Oceania thing, because, you know, among Orwell and, of course, the Hitler references that we get, you know, the trampling of Godwin's law on a daily basis from these people. Yesterday, you see ProPublica posting an article. And the headline was, you know who else collects metadata? Or you know who else?
The Stasi.
The Stasi. Awesome. Right. And you know what was ironic about it? Of course, there were 19 tracking cookies on that page. 19. Collecting your metadata. You know, you think if the editors of ProPublica, if you're going to write a story that, with a headline that says, you know who else tracked or collected metadata? The Stasi. You might want to turn off your metadata collection for that page.
The Stasi.
The Stasi.
What a bunch of crap.
It really, really is. So this this website launched, its very first thing were these never-before-seen photos.
High-res. I love my favorite part about it, high-res photos. So high-res. In case you're so crazy, you want to blow them up and put them on your wall.
Well, that's what happened in the comments section. The comments section.
They're perfect to put on your wall and put in, like, you know, thumbtack yarn in between them.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing was, is in the comments section, all the commenters were going, like, pouring over every detail of the photos as if it was, like, the Zapruder footage.
Yep.
Is that what's that shadow over there? Boy, that's an awfully big parking lot. You know, it's just like, the funny thing Ashby pointed out is...
Brain!
Brain! InfoWars! Ashby pointed out, you know, in the comments, they were remarking about how they had a lot of wasted parking lot space. Like, there's so few cars and so many empty parking spaces. Why do they need all that space? Well, the photos were taken at night, you idiots. After everyone had gone home. That's why there's empty parking spaces. You know, it's just like... I've had it with the amateur hour around this.
We totally should have put up like pictures of like the Short Hills Mall or something out in Jersey. Look, that's the NSA building right there.
We got to take a break back after this.
Genius Bob and Chez Show.
We are back.
Streetways are back again. Street places I didn't know.
Edward Snowden running from the law.
You can just see him looking over his shoulder and like the camera zooms in and freezes.
Is this going to end with like Snowden leaping off a building and landing in the river or something? And then there's a underwater shot, and he's like just floating there, and then suddenly he comes to life. Oh, my God. Oh, the fantasy lives we lead. But anyway, so going back to the Intercept, and I promise you, we are not going to spend the whole show on this. I swear to God. But, you know, this is, you know, a pretty big deal from this past week. People have been waiting for it. Of course, there were corporate trackers on The Intercept. There was one from Google. The Google Analytics bug evidently collects your phone number. I guess if you're on a mobile device or if you're using a Google Voice,
mm-hmm.
The Google Analytics bug collects your phone number. There's a Google Analytics bug on every page of The Intercept, which is just, it's strange. It's because first, let's look at it this way. The Intercept doesn't have any ads on it. All right? You can have server-side stats packages that kind of track what kind of traffic you're getting without using a bug implanted into every page. They're also using something called Mixpanel. So they've got two analytics bugs on that site. You know, the one good thing that I noticed about it, they actually have a technical editor, this guy named Mika Lee. And the reason that it's good is, as we've talked about before, Glenn Greenwald's like, you know, well, he referred to himself as being technically illiterate, which you meant to say right. Technologically illiterate. But,
you know, it's funny. I'm technically illiterate.
Technically illiterate.
Are you?
Yeah. Technically. And it's strange that the guy, you know, the main reporter on a story that's all about technology prior to June was technologically illiterate. Doesn't that surprise? I mean, that's surprising to me. Actually, you know what? I'm not surprised at all. Never mind. I take that back.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that it came all at once, I think, was a big deal.
Yeah.
That all at once he had to know about this, and he didn't. And he didn't surround himself with people who did. He didn't run, because, of course, he's Greenwald, and only he knows best. So he couldn't, you know, and it was a big story. So he felt like he couldn't surround himself with people who could give him, you know, who could give him good advice on what was what. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, an example, like Matt Taibbi learned about economics because he reported on it over a period of time.
Yeah.
And he'll be the first one to tell you that at first, when he began reporting on it, he didn't, you know, he understood the basics of it, but it was only as time went on that he was able to get it. But Greenwald had to, you know, trial by fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he failed miserably.
That's right. That's right. And I don't even know that he's schooling himself on technology so much as the intelligence community. I just wonder how much time he spends learning about how computer networks work, you know, how cell phone signals work. I mean, I just don't know. But I do get the sense that we're just perpetually being misled on all this stuff. And it's either deliberate or unintentional or both. I think there's a little bit of both going on. But, you know, there was a case in point. There was the second article to go up at The Intercept was all about, you know, they really wanted to create a cocktail of outrage with this. So they combined drones and the NSA all into one big chimera. So it's the NSA collecting metadata and feeding it to drones. That's the article.
Dear God. Wow.
Yeah. And yeah. So... You know, but it was all technologically, it was a big jumble. And he was called on it by this other blogger who then Greenwald responded to on Twitter and said, fair point. Fair point. Because what they do is they make this claim. The new phrase coming out of this is death by metadata.
Mm.
But ultimately, it's not the metadata that the drones use to locate the targets.
Right. They use geo-tracking.
Yeah, they used geolocation services and the SIM card and things like that. It's not the metadata that we've been hearing about, phone numbers and all that.
But here's the thing. I know very little about technology, and I know that. Mm-hmm. I know that that's how you track a phone.
Right.
That there is geo-tracking, geolocations. I mean, that's, you know, you can tell, you can figure that out by watching movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And watching television, you can figure that out.
But, I mean, again, I don't know what's objectionable about this. I mean, I do know that there's a lot of tragic collateral damage. And I do agree, actually, that they need to become better at making sure that the targeting is spot on and we're not killing women and children.
Right.
That's all bad. But on the other hand, looking at it in a very, very cold way, it is part of war. And technically, whether or not we like it, we're at war. There is still an AUMF declaring a war on terrorism.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
The entire idea of a war on terrorism is ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, if it was a war on Al-Qaeda, I can understand that.
Right. It's like saying there's a war on murder.
Greenwald lashed out at James Clapper again, director of National Intelligence. This was yesterday, because Clapper said that the terrorists are learning now new ways to get around, you know, the surveillance techniques. And then Greenwald said, you know, that he's full of crap for saying that. Like, that's ridiculous. How could the terrorist possibly be learning this stuff? That's crazy. He's just fear-mongering. But it's actually in this article. It's actually in the Greenwald Scahill article on The Intercept, where they write, one problem, he explains, is that the targets are increasingly aware of the NSA's reliance on geolocating and have moved to thwart the tactic. Later on, they say, some top Taliban leaders, knowing of the NSA's targeting method, have purposely and randomly distributed SIM cards among their units in order to elude their trackers. Now, I'm not saying anything about Edward Snowden's leaks with regards to this. Could be. But we don't know exactly that for sure. We can't say for certainty that's the case. But we do know that what Clapper said, that terrorists are adjusting their methods to avoid the NSA, to avoid the intelligence community, is absolutely true. Now, I'm no Clapper fan. I think what he did last year was ridiculous. It was a resignation-worthy derp.
Mm-hmm.
But this remark that he said before the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday was exactly right, and Glenn Greenwald and Jeremy Scahill proved it.
Mm.
And then Greenwald turns around day later, and then says Clapper's lying, that he's fear-mongering.
Of course. He has to.
This is the main journalistic source for all of this stuff. A guy that is serially misleading the public. Very, very bad. We got to take another break back after this.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
And your promo code is Bob and Chez at BubbleGenius.com. When you go there and buy all of your soaps at checkout, type in Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, and you get 15% off everything. So I wanted to say one last thing. I'm looking at Twitter here, and someone tweeted to me, sorry, no, terrorists reacted to mobile device geolocation targeting by changing OPSEC habits years ago. Well, then why would Jeremy Scahill and Glenn Greenwald write that terrorists are, quote-unquote, increasingly aware of these surveillance techniques? That indicates present tense and active participation in that process. Not something they did 10 years ago. Nonsense. Nonsense. The amount of parsing going on here is ridiculous. So,
right. And you only parse, by the way, and you only hedge when you're trying to make a point, when you're trying to bend things.
Yeah.
Lead it in the direction you need it to go.
Right.
When you've already got that conclusion in your mind and that's what you're trying to reach, the confirmation bias.
So
hedging like that is hedging and parsing is a product of confirmation bias.
Oh yes. By the way, there was a protest rally the other day, and we've talked a lot about how so many protest rallies completely miss the point. I mean, there are established ways, techniques that you can use for successful activism, and it seems like lately everyone's been ignoring them. I mean, Occupy Wall Street
lately.
For a while, everyone's been ignoring them. I mean, Occupy Wall Street was a disaster because they were leaderless and they didn't know what they were doing and there was no message cohesion and all that. Well, there was a protest the other day called The Day We Yelled About... No, it wasn't The Day We Yelled About Surveillance. It was like something like the Day We Got Together and Bitched About Surveillance or something. The Day We Fought Back is what it was. First of all, title's too long. Way too long. And the other problem is, in the title, the first two words are the main problem with that protest. The day. We're going to only limit this this thing where you take 3 seconds to be an activist. We're going to limit that to just one day.
Yeah, so it's called The Day We Fight Back. And if I remember correctly, that was the tagline for Independence Day. I'm pretty sure that was the tagline for Independence Day. I'll go ahead, keep talking.
Are you going to Google it? Okay.
I am.
So that was mistake number one. And then there were a bunch of other things that were just ridiculous. Of course, there was all kinds of metadata collection on the site. Lots of trackers. You know, they're explicit about it in the privacy policy. But that's what they know.
Yes, I was right. The Day We Fight Back.
The Day We Fight Back.
So there it is. Congratulations. We've been invaded by aliens.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. So, yeah, The Day We Fight Back Against Mass Surveillance.
And aliens.
The good news was they were using modern tools and they weren't marching around with puppets. That was good thing. Good thing. They're actually improving slightly. It involved putting your phone number and email into one of two form fields. And then what they would do is they would give you a McMessage and then you would read it to your, you know, the secretary at your congressman's office. And that's what you would do. Or you just do an email and they automate it to your congressman. So, you know, it is, I like the remark. Someone did this. Someone observed on Reddit. Online petitions, the very least you can do without doing nothing.
Right. Yeah. It's literally the least you can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like slapping, you know, Bill Maher used to talk about it. It's like, you know, it's putting a support the troops yellow ribbon bumper sticker on the back of your car. It is literally the least you can do.
Right. Right. And New York Times reported that it was kind of a flop. The whole thing was kind of a flop.
That's shocking.
Is it the protest on Tuesday barely registered? Wikipedia did not participate. Reddit, which went offline for 12 hours during the protests 2 years ago, added an inconspicuous banner to its homepage. Sites like Tumblr, Mozilla, DuckDuckGo, which were listed as organizers, did nothing to their homepages. The most vocal protesters were the usual suspects, activist groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the American Civil Liberties Union, Amnesty International, and Greenpeace. The 8 major technology companies, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, AOL, Apple, Twitter, Yahoo, and LinkedIn, that joined forces in December in a public campaign to reform government surveillance, only participated Tuesday insofar as having a joint website flash the protest banner.
Yeah, it's exactly what it's what I said a while back on Twitter, and I think Shock retweeted this for some very strange reason. I mean, I just don't know where it came from. He retweeted, I think, like yesterday or something like that. I wrote a while back. I'm like, you know, I want to thank Glenn Greenwald and The Guardian for making no one care about this crap anymore.
Yeah.
Greenwald has turned it into such a joke to the point where you know, and I happen to agree with some of what he, you know, with the idea of roping in the NSA, mm-hmm. but he's made it such a fucking circus.
Yeah.
You know, such a caricature and such a farce. There's just, you know, I can't get behind it. And yeah. Now we're not having a good conversation about it. We're not.
No,
it's just
we're not.
Greenwald being a petulant little baby and a lot of other people, a lot more people not really listening anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you'll hear about it on Twitter. You know, of course, if you're following the a certain group, if you're in your little, you know, ecosphere on Twitter, and you happen to be liberal and then you're going to get some, you know, you're going to hear what's going on with First Look Media. You're going to hear what's going on with, with people who are involved in these protests, whatever. But outside of that, you're not going to hear crap.
Yeah, because they've self-marginalized.
Yeah, exactly. Good term. Yeah, they self-marginalized. And I said that from the beginning. I'm like, when you take away the red team,
When you take away the editors that Greenwald had to bounce his stuff off of, and you leave him completely on his own to do whatever he wants, what he gives you is going to be self-marginalizing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've also walled themselves off onto their own site.
Right, exactly. Exactly, and it makes it easier to ignore.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's all, oh God, it's loaded with stuff that...
That's what I said. I'm like, if Greenwald doesn't think that writing under the banner of The Guardian didn't give him a massive amount of clout that he otherwise wouldn't have had, he is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
He is absolutely crazy. I'm all for new journalistic startups. I really am. You know, on that side, the idea of First Look Media thrills me just because I want to see another big media, you know, I want to see an independent, you know, big, well-financed media startup. No issue with that at all.
Yeah.
But this idea that, you know, this, we're going to change everything. And, yeah, it's like, no, actually, if you're going to spout one voice and it's going to be that kind of voice and you're going to wall yourself off behind your castle keep, nobody's going to pay attention to you.
Absolutely. Hey, we got to take one last break back after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Oh, yeah. Favorite Billy Joel song right here. My Life. Got a call from an old friend we used to be real. Okay, so enough of that happy crappy.
Good record. Not my favorite, but good. But very good.
I'd say it's one of my favorite Billy Joel songs. I'd say it's my favorite. I was very fond of this in my childhood, that song.
Laura.
Hmm.
Is I think my favorite Billy Joel song from the Nylon Curtain.
Yeah,
oddly enough, I think he's done it like it's on one live record, which is probably the only time he's ever done it live.
It's just astonishing to listen to Billy Joel or Bruce Springsteen or even David Bowie and to just gawk at the amazing number of incredible songs they've recorded.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think I may have told you this a while back. I can't remember if we were talking about it, but I got, like, quote-unquote dragged to see Billy Joel in Miami in the late 80s. Now, I love Billy Joel from, like, I've written about it many times. Loved Billy Joel for, like, the early portion of his career. Loved it. All the way up to the Nylon Curtain, which I think was 82. But, you know, yeah, look, I'm sorry. An Innocent Man and all that, it never did anything for me. But I got, you know, I had a friend had an extra ticket, dragged me to see him live. And I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, dear God, I forgot how many amazing songs this guy wrote.
Oh, yeah. It really is remarkable. I mean, someone just having that gift. It's like I said Gawk before. I was just thinking, you know, it's like that guy who works at Gawker, who's now leaving Gawker. Who, you know, just has that Midas touch
for Neitz and Zimmerman.
Yeah, for picking the stories that get, you know, 2 million views. Just somehow they've figured out that secret formula, that magic bullet.
Yep.
Anyway, so my favorite story of the week comes to us from our favorite congressman, Steve Stockman. Steve Stockman is just a perpetual train wreck. By the way, I got to pat myself on the back for the derpiest photo of Steve Stockman
he's sticking his tongue out.
Yeah, he is. It's actually a blow-up of a picture that was taken of him standing next to Sarah Palin during that, remember the government shutdown memorial fracas?
The picture of him, for future reference if you wanted, the picture of him standing next to the Duck Dynasty guy at the State of the Union is pretty good too. Where he looks, he's just got this wide-eyed, like, you know, look here.
Well, this, I mean, it's like watching a nonstop slow motion train wreck. It is delicious to look at this. I'm actually going to be sad after March 1st when the Texas Republican primary is over. Right. And he's just going to go back to trolling on Twitter. You know, well, also, he's still going to be a member of Congress, but he's not going to be running for the Republican nomination for Senate anymore after March 4th. Because he's going to lose miserably, and that'll be fun to watch. But it's getting to the point now where initially I was like outraged by Steve Stockman. Now it's just entertaining because, like I said, it's a train wreck. The guy is a royal mess, right? Versus right after he declared his campaign headquarters were condemned. I mean, it looked like Buffalo Bill's creepy basement. The first primary polling showed Stockman with only 6% support. Then he received exactly zero votes in a Tea Party straw poll. Then he disappeared for all of January.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I mean, he missed something like 20 votes. I mean, he even said on Twitter that he was vowing to vote against the omnibus spending bill. And then he missed that vote, too, because he was off in mysterious locations, and he just suddenly popped up into January to continue his candidacy for
next,
Senate.
Next week, I'm going to I'm going to like be able to go over to Beverly Boulevard and wait in line, and then go in and see Steve Stockman, who's going to be sitting in there with a paper bag on his head, like Shia LaBeouf. I am sorry.
Right, right. It's like a Stockman's like a Zelig character. He just appears.
He is. He is pulling a Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, and then Stockman hadn't voted in any Republican primary since 2004. Not a single Republican. I mean, it's like the laziest voters only vote in the general election, never vote in the primaries, right?
Do you think he'll get reelected?
To Congress? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's
insane. That's insane.
Unless the Republican Party steps up and offers a serious... Well, no, they can't. I mean, it's already done. It's this coming up. I don't think anyone's challenging him.
I'm not paying attention to that.
Yeah, no one's. I was going down this weird route. No, I know no one's challenging him on the Republican side in his primary.
Think about that. That is the best we can do. They're saying in his district in Texas. There he is. That is the best we can do.
Well, that district is so heavily gerrymandered. There's no way a Republican candidate can lose. There's just no way. It's just stacked for the Republicans. And unless it's gerrymandered the other way by the Democrats, because let's face it, I mean, I hate to be that guy, but both sides gerrymander. That's a fact.
Right.
It's the problem of gerrymandering. It's not the problem of one or both parties. Well, it is kind of is both parties. But nevertheless, I mean, that's why he's going to win, because he's a Republican. He can't lose. But now there's this thing where the super PAC that supports John Cornyn, who Stockman is challenging for the Senate seat, released a website where they dig up that arrest when Stockman was arrested in 1977 for having Valium in his underpants. And this is a funny story. I mean, you talk about stupid, like dumb. He had already been arrested and charged with a traffic violation for which he was going to jail for 2 days. So he goes to jail with the diazepam in his underwear, in the fly section of his underwear.
That's awful.
You know, that useless, I don't know, I don't ever use that. I don't ever use that weird flap. You have to have some sort of twisted anatomy to get around to zigzag that dog leg. But yeah, so it was stored there. And so he was going to prison with that. So when they strip searched him, Rose. When they strip searched him, they found the Valium tablets in there. And so then they charged him with felony possession of a controlled substance, which is later knocked down. It was later reduced to deal with the prosecutor. So he ended up pleading no contest to use of controlled substance. So they released this commercial that says that he was busted for drugs back in 1977, which is true. But now Stockman, the campaign is suing, well, I think it's Stockman himself, suing the super PAC for libel. So now they're claiming, right, that, you know, that this never happened. He was never, but it's ridiculous because he's on record as saying that it happened.
Right.
In a 1995 interview, Stockman said that his girlfriend, quote unquote, shoved the pills in his pants right before I went in for the weekend. Right before he went into the jail.
So Stockman's actually like kind of secretly cool. Like he was this crazy man, like, you know, drugstore cowboy Matt Dillon.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
And right. And if you look at his mugshot, which I posted on the Daily Banner, his mugshot, he looks like Neil Young. He looks like Steve Stockman in his Neil Young phase, with apologies to Neil Young. But then he also said to the Houston Chronicle, I may have been in jail a couple of times, two or three times. When they found the pills, they charged me with a felony. That's a direct quote. And then in the when they file this suit, they're claiming things like, I've never been charged or committed in such an act. His spokesman said the Cornyn PAC claims Stockman has been jailed more than once, was charged with a felony, all of which are false statements. Wrong. That's all wrong. He's admitted to doing it. Plus now, like I said, there's a mugshot and a record of the arrest, which is perfectly explicit. There's a guy named Stephen Ernest Stockman with the same birthday as Steve Stockman. Mm. Was booked for felony possession of diazepam. It's right there in print. We have a PDF of it up on the Daily Banter. You can read it. It's entertaining. But they're still denying it. I mean, this is like one thing after another. It's this is like a legal version of his Twitter trolling. It's ridiculous. Because he's on Twitter all the time. I mean, if you're just joining us, Steve Stockman has a Twitter feed in which all he does is spend his entire day on his taxpayer-funded salary trolling Democrats on Twitter. Like one of his funniest Twitter trollings was right after that poll was released. There was a poll for the Republican Senate primary in Texas that showed, I think, John Cornyn with 50% support and Steve Stockman with 6% support. Well, Stockman's tweet after that poll came out was, breaking, 50% of Texans disagree with John Cornyn. I mean, it's you see,
liberal John Cornyn.
Liberal John Cornyn. That's right. Well, that was the other thing, his ridiculous manifesto in which he said liberal John Cornyn like 20 times. But that's entertaining. I mean, you know, it just you almost could predict something like this would happen because we kind of knew already about the underpants pills in 1977. But the fact that he's actually calling more attention to it with a libel suit is just utterly stupid.
Yeah,
I mean, there was a piece written in Texas Monthly in 1996. It was a lengthy profile titled "Congressman Clueless." It's just hilarious, and so they got details in there about the Valium thing. They also Stockman's quoted in there as referring to himself back in 1977 as a stutterino.
A what?
A stutterino, like a stud. It's like stud, but Arena.
Oh, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Steve Stockman was a stutterino. But they describe Stockman, they wrote that Stockman's, quote, harebrained ideas and headline-making gaffes have made him the laughingstock of his party. And I wrote in Banter, some things never change. Because he really, really is. I mean, if you want to be entertained by a Republican, go follow Steve Stockman on Twitter.
Oh, I should do that. I haven't.
By the way,
I've like started going through and cutting down on Twitter followers, actually.
Speaking of new follows on Twitter, following Republicans on Twitter, there's a, I think there's a parody account now for G. Gordon Liddy.
Oh, no.
It's for some reason, G. Gordon Liddy or his people didn't register G. Gordon Liddy as a username on Twitter.
That's all right. Whoever runs that account will be dead soon.
Yeah, probably. But it's clearly a parody account because the profile pic is Gordon Liddy standing on the deck of a cruise ship wearing like a red, white, and blue banana hanger. Like naked except for this ridiculous bikini bathing suit. But if you know anything about Gordon Liddy, the tweets will just crack you up because they're just ripping on all of his ridiculous, you know, his ridiculous life and his weird pronouncements. Like there was a thing that referenced the fact that when they wanted to bomb the Brookings Institute, when the plumbers wanted to bomb the Brookings Institute, it was Liddy's idea that he wanted he wanted the committee to reelect to buy for them, for this black op, buy them a fire truck to go along. To make the ruse complete, they needed a fire truck to engage in the bombing of the Brookings Institute. So insane. Like people are asking him what rat tastes like. It's hilarious. All right. Moving on, I want to talk about this Whopper healthcare lie. I mean, it's just like one big lie after another with the Republicans and the health care law, the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
You know all the old ones, death panels, you know, It's a failed law. It's a it's the job killing healthcare law. All that stuff. It's all lies.
Of course.
And then last week there was that CBO report where they initially knee jerked and said that the CBO report claims that Obamacare is going to cause 2 million people to lose their jobs, to be fired. I mean, that was the spin, and it wasn't just the Republicans. I think we talked about this last week, but there's another side to this. Right. It wasn't just Republicans. It was the press. I mean, like, every headline was wrong. So then on Sunday, obviously the word went out to all of these Republican analysts that we're not going to say anymore that the jobs, all these people are going to be fired. We're going to say that the law discourages people from working. We're going to say that the law encourages lazy people.
Yeah.
Like Roy Blunt went on Fox News Sunday and said, quote, "I think any law you pass that discourages people from working can't be a good idea. Why would we want to do that? How does that allow people to prepare for the time when they don't work?" You know, this is the funny thing about that. Any member of Congress complaining about people being lazy and not working enough. Congress was only in session 113 days last year. Roy Blunt, who thinks you're lazy if you don't work 60 hours a week. And three jobs. Only worked 113 days last year.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me again how working fewer hours is lazy, Mr. Blunt. SE Cup was on this week with George Stephanopoulos referring to it as the law as disincentivizing work, which is bad economically, culturally, and socially, she said. Now, if these guys want to take the approach that they're going to go around saying that you're lazy if you don't work like all day, every day, and nights and weekends, go for it. Seriously, go for it. You're going to be really popular among
people. Yeah, good luck with that message.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, there are only going to be 2.4 million people reducing their hours or leaving the workforce to start their own jobs or to get a better job, etc., because of the law. Yeah. I mean, it's not like 2.4 million people quitting their jobs. It's 2.4 million people. That includes people who want to start a business. That includes people who are just scaling back maybe to part-time hours. There's nothing wrong with that.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
I'd like to do that.
I mean, while we're here, Americans work more hours than any industrialized nation. We take fewer vacations. We retire at older ages. And our work days are longer. In 1970, we worked around 35 hours per week and made $59,000 per year. Adjusted for inflation. Today, it's 46 hours per week and $51,000 per year. Over 1 million employees every year miss work due to work-related stress, costing businesses $200 billion annually.
Annually.
Lovely. What we really need to do is work more. That's what we're being told. All right, so we've got a big after party coming up. Want to talk about a little more politics. And there's something that we referenced early in the show we want to get to. Specifically is, Chez and I kind of feel like we've become more conservative over the last year, which I don't know if that's true. I really don't know if it is true. But we're going to analyze that. We're going to get into it, talk about it, try to figure it out. Figure out what's going on. What the hell is going on?
We're white guys, which means that we naturally will become more conservative as we get older.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Comcast buying Time Warner Cable. We're also going to talk about Rand Paul. Rand Paul's NSA lawsuit. I promise we're not going to talk
about that was pretty insane.
Yeah. But there's another angle on it. Of course, we're going to talk about the latest episode of True Detective, which was just outstanding.
Yes.
Worst persons in the world, hate mail of the week, a little bit of porn on the after party. Going to talk about it.
I didn't even know about that.
Well, you wrote about it. It's direct reference to something you wrote about.
Oh, okay. I don't remember what I wrote about.
Yeah. And a whole lot more. If you aren't subscribed to the after party, hey, what's the matter with you? It's only $6 a month. It's a great show. It's commercial free. $6 a month. Subscribe right there at BobSeska.com. You can cancel at any time, so hell, if you want to scam the system, sign up, pay $6, and then download all of the shows in one pop, and then cancel your subscription.
There you go.
Fine.
Rip us off.
Do that if you want. But we'd prefer it if you stuck around. listen to future shows too. Tell, and if you, and if you're a member of the after party, tell a friend, or like tell two friends this week about the after party, and then sign up. Tweet about it, put it on Facebook, whatever you want to do. You're a rally to fight back against no one subscribing to the after party.
That's right. It's the day we fight back.
The day we
against apathy.
The 5 minutes we fight back. All right. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.